welcome to episode 82. This week, I'll share an experience, actually two experiences that I did that I really wasn't sure I could do. And don't worry, these are good news stories. First, remember that Princess Kona won the Animal Welfare League of Arlington's calendar contest for 2024, winning her presence on the cover, and one of the prizes is a portrait to be painted by an esteemed artist in Washington, D.C., Maggie O'Neill. We went to meet Maggie and plan the portrait, and I'll share it when it's done, likely sometime this month. It was in her studio that I was reluctant to let her out of her carrier and finally decided to hold her so she could look around because she was already in the carrier for quite a while. Maggie said, "There's nothing that she can really get into, so you can let her out." Okay. When we get to the vet, she hangs out pretty close to me, so I figured she would do the same. I set her on the floor and, like a bullet, she ran under a shelf. After a few minutes, I needed to find her and figure out where she was, and she decided not to respond to me calling her. And she often does respond. I'm searching, and the others in the studio as well. Finally, after quite some time, we find her behind some bolts of paper and boxes, and beyond our reach. We try to scoot her to the entrance where she went in because we simply couldn't reach her where she was. After maybe 15, might be 20 minutes, we get to an area wide enough for me to grab her. To be fair, the vet's office is pretty small and there's not anywhere to hide. It was quite an adventure for her, and when we got home, she was super lovable, likely saying, "Don't take me there again." One of the nice things is that when we're in the car, I play cat music from Apple Music. And when I'm gone, I use Google Music's cat music. The interesting thing about the Apple one is after about 15 minutes, the cat music, which is supposed to be soothing, has an occasional chirping birds, which the cat is going, "Oh, there's a bird somewhere." And I don't think she finds that quite as relaxing. So the first experience is one that was in New York City. And when I talked about the electric bikes last week, it reminded me of this event. I really want to share it with you. Every year, there is a cycling event that bikes a total of 40 miles, and you go through every one of the five boroughs. And it's called the Bike Five. It's advertised as an event and not a race. And even though I was biking quite a bit, my average bike ride was maybe half of that. So 40 miles was indeed something that I was a little bit concerned about. So I'm a bit nervous, although I knew that the route was fairly flat. And when I say fairly, there is a little surprise near the end. My friend lived in New York City, so I go to the bike shop and get a bike box, that's hard to say, learn how to pack the bike in the box and hope I can put it back together when I get to New York, and we're off on Amtrak to New York City. Now, even though it's not a race, we didn't want to be at the end of the starting point, and so we bought VIP tickets that gave us some extra bling and a position in the first wave of cyclists. Why would you want to be in the first wave? There are more than 30,000 participants. Yes, 30,000. So you definitely want to be in the first wave. Especially if you're thinking, "Okay, I know it's an event, but I will be partially racing other people." There are cameras along the entire route, and they snap pictures of you as you cross different points, and they sort them at the end by your number that you're wearing on your cycling outfit. So you can buy them at the end. We're consistently in the top 15 or so cyclists, and I could tell the ones in the front were indeed racing. I got to the lead once and only once. Alas, it was still a fun event. To emphasize that it's not a race, they don't time the event except for one part, and there isn't a clock at the end, just a finish banner and a large reception area. Of course, I have a bike I had the Garmin bike thingy, so I knew how fast and how long the bike race was, or bike event was. Yes, I keep saying race because here's the little secret when I'm biking. If I'm biking anywhere and I see someone up ahead, we're racing. Well, along the route, you go over five bridges, and none are that challenging except the Verrazano Bridge that connects Staten Island to Brooklyn. The bridge is 0.81 miles long and an elevation of 693 feet, which is certainly tough enough, and it is within the final mile and a half of the event, so you're going to be a bit tired. As you start on the bridge, you activate a timer, and it gives you your time, and as you leave the bridge, you get a little sticker at the end showing how fast or how long you took going up and down the bridge. Now, when you come down the bridge, of course, downhill, you're right at the finish line, so it's a nice reward. My bike five time on that bridge was 6 minutes and 40 seconds, so not too bad. And I did beat my friend's time, who is 20 years younger than I am. It was an amazing race, and to have participated and finish it, because there were a couple of points I was thinking, well, you can peel off, and you did pretty good. But anyway, I'll post some photos of the event that I finished in May of 2015, which is now almost a decade ago. So that was the first event I wanted to share with you. And the second one is one that I never, ever thought I would do. And it was in South Africa. I mentioned that I'll do an episode just on South Africa because I've gone there so many times and do really want to share those wonderful experiences. But I'm pulling this one event out to share because it fits along the genre of the other one. In South Africa, the most famous landmark in Cape Town is Table Mountain, right on the edge of the city, and it's huge as you see it, overlooking the city. This particular time, I was traveling with two friends, and both of them are much younger than I am and are adrenaline junkies, and they wanted to do everything activity-wise that was, in my mind, a little dangerous. I hoped I could do them with them, and I was really nervous and knew I would bow out of some of them. So one event is to hike up the top of Table Mountain. That's fine. I've hiked many times before. And then abseil off down 367 feet, or about 112 meters. Abseiling, which I've learned, is a fancy word for propelling off the mountain, a perfectly good mountain at that. We had a great guide who asked if we wanted to take the scenic route up to the top or a fast route. Well, we chose the fast route, and we bounded up that pretty quickly. And when they said how long it would take, we shaved off a third of the time. That's how fast we went up the mountain. The plan is for the guide to install propelling ropes at the top of the mountain, and then one by one, you propel off the mountain to a landing below. Now, when you look down at this landing, let me just add there are trees and what we learned, some pretty prickly bushes. Anyway, when you see Cape Town in the photos, you'll see it's quite a ways down. In fact, even after you take a cable car down the mountain from the top, and when you do that, you get another sense of how far you jump off that perfectly solid mountain. So each of my friends goes first, and I am doing the math in my head. If I decide not to jump, the value of the experience hiking up the mountain and the scene, well, that was probably worth the money. And it really wasn't that much to begin with because the exchange rates are pretty nice. I expressed to the guide that I wasn't sure I would jump, and he said, "No problem. If you don't, then your friends can get an extra jump," because the event included two jumps per person. Well, do I or do I not? Literally, do I jump? Do I pass? My friends are encouraging me and telling me that I can do it. Now, you have to remember a couple of things. First, I am really afraid of heights. Even like a step stool, I am afraid of heights. Second, I'm not all that coordinated, as you all know by now. And third, well, I'm just a big old fraidy cat. Finally, I say, okay, I'll do it. And I still don't know how I decided to say those words. By the way, when you do this, you go to the edge of the mountain, turn around, and then you step down on a little ledge to push yourself off. And now, even though I said I would do it, I'm freaking out. And you'll see my facial expression in the episode photos. I'm really nervous. So I'm on the edge. I turn around. Hey, those two steps are good. Then the guide says, Spike, take one step back and move off the mountain. And I take one step forward. He says, you take one step back and push yourself off. And my friends are kind of chuckling. Okay, I'm holding onto the rope for dear life. And again, I have the command to step back. And I step a little bit forward. The guide was very experienced, and he knew that if someone says no three times, you're likely not going to jump off. And he said, how about if I jump with you? I look at him and I say, well, how does that work? You'll be attached to me, and you don't have to do anything except enjoy the ride. And my friends are really encouraging me to do this now because there's nothing to worry about, right? And thankfully, they were being very nice about it because these particular friends sometimes aren't quite so nice. Okay, I think I can do that. He readjusts the ropes and so we're connected together and we jump. I might have been screaming, I don't remember. My eyes are closed and we're about halfway down and he says, you can open your eyes. And I gingerly open them and let me tell you what. The view was amazing. And it didn't even feel like I was moving because he was controlling, of course, the tempo of going down the mountain. We're getting pretty close to the landing point, and he said something that I didn't hear and likely told me how to get ready for the landing. But I landed into a bush and scraped my leg. So I got a war wound from this event. And I made it. We hike back up to the top, and the guide says, now, Spike, you can do that all by yourself. And I said, nope, it was amazing, and I'm not jumping again. I knew I couldn't do it by myself, and a friend took my last jump, and the guide was really nice since we bounded up the mountain, and they both got an extra jump. And then we get to go to the next step. And our next step is to help the guide get all the ropes together so that we can pack up and leave. And he says, now go remove, and I don't know what they're called. I call them the little thingies that hold the ropes on the rock. And I'm really glad that I didn't see these before jumping. The guide said, oh, go release the little thingies. And I looked. They look a lot like a tent stake. And I said, well, how do we get them out of the rock? I don't have any tools. And he said, you put a small, and I mean a very small, amount of pressure pressing them upward, and they come right out. And they did. And this was holding the ropes and me. I was kind of freaking out again that these don't seem very secure, even though, of course, I knew that they were. Anyway, I abseiled off Table Mountain, and it was amazing. To commemorate this, there is an artist in South Africa that makes little sculptures of little metal people, and they are doing different activities, like abseiling off a rock. And it's been on my shelf, my living room, all these years, and it's a wonderful reminder of this experience. Plus, the artist is rather quite impressive. So that's the total sum of the big events that I've done athletically. If you travel to South Africa, you definitely want to do this, because if I can do it, anybody can. We had an amazing guide, and it was one amazing day. I'll finish up the episode with a little work stuff. As the crisis was unfolding, since I was an outsider from the organization and in charge of the learning organization, there were a lot of areas that I saw that looked like gaps in how to keep the agency more prepared for the next crisis. And remember, I pretty much am a strategically thinking guy. I think that having that perspective from being at Headquarters Tactical Air Command when Desert Storm kicked off, I remember then from my vantage point as a relatively young captain, there were a lot of perspectives in the rooms from Vietnam, which in all fairness was the last major conflict the United States had the most experience with. First, it was decades earlier, and secondly, it was in a very different part of the world in a very different time. Lessons learned must be documented in a way that leans on the past, certainly, and continually integrates the future, whether it be a different environment, changes in technology, or even changes in the political landscape, so when the time comes, you have the right plan for the right time. And the military does that pretty well. Recurring training has that important aspect in a career, and that's how to make sure that you're keeping up with your skill sets, especially in terms of resolving bank failures, which in a crisis is different than just one or two that you might have during the course of a full year. And these crises tend to come every 10 to 12 years, and the turnover can be significant in that period of time. Part of recurring training is to figure out how to make sure you know how to conduct just-in-time training for maximizing scenarios like what the FDIC experienced. Bringing on thousands of temporary employees in a very short period of time during the crisis requires a preparedness of the current team to have the training materials and skills to leap forward in the midst of a crisis. Not everyone who is the best at what they do can be good at administering just-in-time training. To do this better going forward, I suggested that the FDIC initiate a simulation program. The idea would be to mirror the kinds of gaming like the National Defense University would do for the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. At the time, the FDIC IG was a retired sergeant major or the top enlisted rank in the United States Army. And he both understood how this would benefit the agency and had the power to encourage the senior leadership that I had a good idea. Remember that leadership is often about building consensus and with the right people. So we got authorization to build the program with resources. And with my connections at NDU, we hired a top-notch expert. In short order, we had the first simulation event, and it included the senior leadership of the FDIC, the Secretary of the Treasury, the Chairman of the Federal Reserve, the President of the New York Federal Reserve, and many others. We had plenary sessions and breakouts where various groups of these very senior leaders would war game different scenarios for the United States, as well as integrating how key international reserve banks in Japan, Australia, and the United Kingdom would play a part. Why? Well, you know banks are international, and there are implications for both a national crisis that unfolds into a global one. It also is important to have Australian and Japanese perspectives in the room, because when decisions are made in a crisis, especially in the financial arena, decisions must take the recognition of when the financial markets in Australia and Japan open, which is obviously significantly earlier than the United States. It's very complex, and I am not an expert. This program, though, was amazing because I learned a lot, and Everyone saw the value in doing these on a regular basis with all the key leaders. Now, remember, especially, it's important because the Secretary of the Treasury, the Chairman of the FDIC, the Board of the FDIC, and the Chairman of the Federal Reserve are all political appointees and rotate far more frequently than career employees. And also keeping in mind those issues that I raised earlier about keeping your training current and ready for the next crisis. The program was amazing, and the next steps were to do similar simulations at the next level of leadership so that everyone was ready for the crisis. The team we had on this project were phenomenal, and one of the most important aspects of the planning was to have facilitators that could facilitate and engage very senior level executives, and they had to have knowledge in their own preparation of the whole program. So you had to have the right people in the room, and we did. I'm pleased to say that this program won a Group Chairman's Award 2 years in a row on how the program came together, as well as the impact on the agency and the nation. Well, I'll leave this week here. I hope you enjoyed my Bike 5 and jumping off a perfectly good mountain stories, and there was no way that I would jump out of a perfectly good airplane. There are no ropes. Have a wonderful week, and remember, have courage and be kind. The world needs that right now, as all of us know.